Welcome to Books in the Biz, the show where real-world business meets real-world results. Hosted by business strategist Dan Paulson and veteran CFO Richard Beltre, this podcast breaks down the stories, trends, and financial insights shaping today's companies. Dan brings decades of experience helping leaders simplify operations, build strong cultures, and scale with confidence. Rich adds his deep financial expertise from guiding organizations across healthcare, construction, logistics, and professional services. Together, they dig into what's really happening behind the numbers and what it means for owners, executives, and anyone trying to grow a stronger, smarter business. This is practical conversation, real talk, and tools you can use right now. Welcome to Books in the Biz.
Welcome back to Books in the Biz. Rich, how is life in New Jersey?
It's okay. Not too
bad. Excellent. Excellent. At the time of this recording, it is raining really nicely here. And as I was explaining to you, I have a car cruise this afternoon, which I'm beginning to question whether or not it's actually going to happen. But rain could also be part of our subject today as well, since we're talking about roofs, because apparently Facebook thinks I need a new roof for some reason. And it, while it's really not about roofs or roofing companies, I found something interesting, because I'm sure you've experienced this too. Anytime something is mentioned on or around Facebook, all of a sudden stuff starts populating your feed that is very similar to the subject that you talked about. So I'm guessing you're going to start looking for a new roof here pretty soon too, since that's what we're talking about here. But one thing I found, let me pull this up so I can kind of show you what I'm talking about. And let's just do this here. Okay. So here's one of the first ads that popped up on Facebook. And just to be clear, I've crossed out the names of the companies and tried to clean up as much of that as possible. You might recognize them by the images. In no way, shape, or form am I or Rich commenting on the quality of the work of these companies or anything like that. That's not the topic of what's here. But there was an interesting observation. And as you can see, for those of you who have the video, the roof price starts here at $79.99. And you can kind of see where they, on this one, they talk about, you know, roofs are usually $15K. I'm like, well, even at $15K, I think that's a pretty good price, because I think I paid more than that when I got mine done. And I know you mentioned yours was higher too. Yeah. Well, here's another one. Okay, now we're down to $7,500. And he's talking about the roof being 20K. Okay. Let's click on the next one. Now we're down to $6,499. So we're at just under $6,500. We got another one that's $6,399. We've got the next one here is now down to $6,250. Rich, this is a hell of a deal. Every time I click on something, it gets cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, here's one for now, $5,997. So we're under $6,000 for a brand new roof on your house. And they talk about how roofs are, you know, sometimes anywhere between 20 and 50K. My experience helping my mother get a new roof several years ago, actually not that many years ago, about 3 years ago, she spent about 40K on her roof. So to me, that price seems a little bit more legit. But again, not commenting on the quality. They keep talking about, you know, quality of goods and services. So let me show you, because they all also seem to have pretty much the same verbiage in their posts. So, you know, out of, you know, get three quotes. One is suspiciously cheap, all this other stuff. You know, it basically talks about quality goods, quality work, this, that, the other thing. So they all kind of say the same thing. And I guess what I'm struggling with here, and we've had some conversation about this, but I don't think we've gone into the depth that maybe we should. And I'm just trying to turn this off here. Oh, come on, cooperate with me. Anyway, I'll leave it up for now. This seems like a race to the bottom. So we start at 8,000, then we get down to 6,000. That's a pretty big difference on something that you and I have already, we know we've paid a lot more money for. Now, the operations person to me says, well, there are probably opportunities to streamline the process and get some savings and still maintain some profitability. I would be interested in talking to a roofer about that. I know you from a financial side are eventually going to say, well, if you keep cutting your price, then what are you going to have left to work with here? So I've talked enough now. Let's get your side of things. What do you see that that is good or bad about trying to compete on price and price alone?
If you're going to try to compete on price, my first concern is, do you actually know your cost?
Mm-hmm.
No. Or, you know, those are the guys that scare me the most because they work on gut feel rather than putting pen to paper or knowing their costs enough that they could stand there and actually spit them off at you in a matter of 5 minutes. You know, that it's going to cost this much in labor on average is fine, right? If it's going to take you, you know, a week to do a job or a couple days to do a job. I mean, I'm not a roofer, so I can't tell you what the estimation is, right? But, you know,
I will tell you that one of the companies on here, and I will say all these companies that I posted on here, even though I crossed out the names, I recognize all the names and I perceive them to be very reputable companies. One company will advertise a roof in a day. So that's stripping the roof down and putting new shingles on. I would guess that's more of a standard ranch style home, but, you know, just to give you some background in what I see here.
Nope, understood. So, you know, a day, maybe a carryover, you know, they know it's going to be this much money. They know their labor rate. They know that the materials are going to cost them X dollars. They're not expecting any issue underneath, and that might be a caveat in the $79.99 or the $59.99, you know, if we have to replace, you know, the actual underlayment or everything else, like what else am I not getting? So I think that's my first concern, you know, because those are the guys that are basically thinking, well, you know, and I'll use this phrase, I know he's with you before, but like, you know, we'll make it up on volume. You know, if you're losing money on the job and then you go get another job and you're losing money on that job, you're not making anything up on volume because there's no profit in either one of them. So it's just a further, like you said, race to the bottom. That's where my biggest fear is, you know, if these are relatively small roofing companies, you know, then do you have a data point? Are you running it like everybody else that runs it where they know your receivables and they know the cash in the bank and then they don't actually pay attention to the cost? So if you're paying attention to your cost, and you know these numbers and you know what's going to hit you, then, you know, if you can still do it, like you, I would love to have a conversation with you. How did you do it? How did you get to the point where you can do it? My roof costs double what they're advertising. At minimum, it costs double. And that was before they started racing to the bottom. So at their higher price, it was double that. So,
right.
You know, how did you get there? How are you making a profit? You know, and I guess the second part is it an advertising thing? Like, you know, do you give away one at that price, you know, but your house doesn't qualify? You know, when you go and buy a car,
right?
And there was an ad in the paper and the ad in the paper said, you know, get this car for $200 a month. And then when you get to the dealership, like, no, we don't have that car anymore. It's a $500 a month car, you know, not anymore. I don't think anybody sells a car for $500 a month, but anyway, you know, is this an advertising thing? Is it
sure
designed to get you to call? So anyway, that's kind of, those are the two things that I'm thinking of. The scary one, that you don't know your numbers and you're giving away roofs for free and I'm coming over and moving in. And then the second one being, you know, if this is your marketing play, okay, except you're going to piss some people. You're going to make some people angry. You're going to make some people angry when they come in and realize that you're just, you know, the advertisement's not real, not consistent. I'll say it's not consistent.
Yeah, I think so. Looking now, I'll look at it from the operation side. Here's where I think there might be some where they're, they are getting some advantages to streamlining the process. I have seen now where, you know how you, typically they'd roll in a dumpster, they'd rip everything off the roof, then they pick it up and they throw it in the dumpster. Well, now I see they have dumpsters that are actually, they're able to elevate up to the roof height. What I perceive is happening is now they can pull this dumpster up alongside, they tarp off the roof, and they basically filter everything into the dumpster right away. So what that does is that minimizes waste on the ground that you have to pick up. Of course, your biggest problem is nails, because when you're ripping off a roof, there's all these nails that fall. And last I checked, most homeowners don't like it when they have a bunch of flat tires. So they've got to go through and make sure they got all the nails picked up. I also perceive from a marketing and operations standpoint, and it's kind of what you're talking about with, you know, is this really the lowest, you know, am I going to get it for this cost? My guess is, well, it might be a quality shingle. There's different levels of shingles. And if you look at, you know, the standard shingles out there will last approximately 10 to 15 years max. You get into the architectural shingles, 25 to 30 years, and possibly longer depending upon how much hail or whatever other damage you get. So, but they're not going to be your base shingles. They're going to now be an upcharge. There is then metal or steel roofing, which is basically at that point you're a lifetime roof, but now you're going to pay double even what probably the 30-year shingles are going to be. So I perceive part of this is an attractive offer to get you in the door. The salesperson is going to sit there and talk to you and say, well, you know, if you're going to be here a couple of years, this is perfectly fine and we can do this for $6,000. Or if this is, you know, how long are you planning on living here? Oh, you're going to be here another 20 years? Well, wouldn't you want something that's going to last at least as long as you're going to live in this house? So why don't we look at architectural shingles, or why don't we look at the steel and talk about putting on a metal roof or something like that, which now, again, escalates that cost. But a good salesperson can kind of elevate and sell some add-ons in there. I know one of the articles here also listed, you know, we'll also put on gutter guards. So keep the leaves out of your gutters. We'll do that as included on the price. So in that way, they're kind of including an extra add-on with it. And that was also the highest price one that I listed. But I think that's part of what they're doing. So they're giving you a really attractive offer. They're getting in the door, and then there's the upsells that come with it. The other option I would see from an operations standpoint is typically, and you might have experienced this when the last time you had a roof put on, they start working on your roof, they put a sign out in your yard from the roofing company, and then what's the next thing they do? They send a salesperson up and down the street saying, hey, we're working on so-and-so's roof. While we're in the area, can we do your roof as well? So now that they got their team in the area, if they're doing four or five roofs in that area, they're using the same labor. It doesn't add that much time. They don't have to haul their stuff back to the shop or across town or to a different city. They can basically work that block. And, you know, that's also kind of economies of scale, if you will, because they're now doing multiple houses in the same location. So I perceive that's probably some of what's going on here, where they're able to kind of get that price point down a little bit. But maybe at some point we should get a construction company or a roofing company on here and talk a little bit more about, you know, how might they do this. But, you know, from an operations standpoint, that's the first thing I would look at. If we're going to go out and market roof, how are we going to do that in a way that's going to minimize our costs and maximize our profit margins and our gross sales? And those are just the ways that I would perceive.
Understood. I think good point about the guys walking up and down the street trying to get the guys that, you know, it. My personal opinion, and you can definitely prove me wrong here, is I don't see that saves all that much when we're talking about 15, 20 grand versus 7 or 6, right?
Right.
The other point, though, I think you're 100% right. The salesperson or the person you're meeting with is then going to look at it and say, yes, I can slap up the cheapest shingle. It's going to take us one day. We're not going to do any extras. It's going to be base price. Right. So I can get that. It sounds like there's a big spread there. I'd be very interested in having that construction.
Well, here's the other thing. With base asphalt shingles, you can lay multiple layers over the top. So if you don't have to strip the roof, you go with the second layer over the top of the first layer.
You know,
that right there saves you a ton of labor as well.
I didn't think of that. I did a full tear off.
Yeah.
I tore it completely off. I already had two layers of shingles up there. So third layer, they don't want to do that.
You can do it, but it's not highly recommended.
So I was like, nope, take it off, get rid of it. So we took it down and put shingles on that. We definitely pushed up the shingles that we put on there. We put the ones on there that actually had Scotchgard like built into it.
I don't know if
it was actually Scotchgard, but that's why when I go back to it, you know, 10 years later and I look at it, I'm like, that was the right choice, you know, because there's not a water stain. There's not anything on that roof. So, you know, we did that with a bunch of materials when we redid the house. But specifically for the roof, you know, they talked us into, we like this shingle. I'm like, guess what? So do I, because it's the higher level and it's had this built into it. Like, it's not going to stain like these other roofs do. And we did the same thing with the gutters, you know? So the question becomes, you know, was I in a different mindset, you know, where I wanted the quality? So I don't think because I like the quality, because I'm a quality type person when I'm doing these things. And I'm looking at it from the standpoint you brought up. I want it to last me for X number of years. I don't want to do this again in 5 or 10. Like, I don't want to do it that way. So I'm looking at it from that point. The likelihood of me even responding to a $7,500 ad without something else telling me that that's the company I want to work with, I think I'd ignore the $7,500 ad. It almost works against what someone like me would want to do.
And to be honest, maybe you and I wouldn't be the target market for that, but let's dig into that a little further, because, you know, we talked about this race to the bottom. And I think the biggest challenge that most organizations have, at least in my experience, is, you know, the owner doesn't want to adjust their price to what they need to make out of fear of losing that customer. And I've been on both ends of it. So when I was in the restaurant business, we worked with product that, you know, the cost fluctuated often because of what it was tied to. It was basically tied to milk prices. And the moment milk prices started going up, mix costs started going up. And then you start looking at what you're selling the product for, and all of a sudden your margins start dropping. Now, at the time I was working at that company, the owner had an accountant that said, well, who cares if you have fewer clients? If you sell at a higher profit margin, you can take on fewer clients, still make the same amount of money. Okay, that's true to a point, until eventually you price yourself out where you lose too many clients and now you're going the wrong direction. And part of that might have been what happened in that situation. At the same point, the other side of this is you keep dropping your price. As I just showed you on here, somebody's going to come in $50 cheaper, $100 cheaper, $1,000 cheaper. And you start playing this game where, okay, if I'm going through my feed and every other thing is an ad for the exact same product or service and it just keeps getting cheaper, what am I going to do? If I am price conscious, I'm just going to keep going until I find the cheapest guy or gal out there, and that's the one I'm going to go with. So from the business side of me, I don't see where this is a winning strategy long term. Now, maybe again, they're all using the same marketing company and the marketing company has the strategy. Well, this is just the door opener, and then you upsell them on other features, benefits, or products that you can go along with it. I'm just curious as to, you know, from your side of things, from the financial side, and we can also talk about a client we both have who had a consulting firm come in and say, well, you know, you're going to give your product away, or you're going to sell your product for, you know, $1,000 off or $2,000 off. You're going to constantly offer these specials. And I said, I just don't see how you win, because your competition is going to do the same thing. And if you're all competing on the same thing, which is the number, eventually somebody's going to lose. And it's probably going to be you, because you're going to keep lowering your price to the point where now it's not even profitable to do it, even no matter how many you do.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when I was in business school, I got in trouble. you had to do a class, right? Which was sort of the capstone, you know, business expert class that, you know, was one of the last classes you take before you graduate. And we had to run literally a sneaker company. Okay. And we had to make all the decisions, and then you'd put them in the computer and say, these are my decisions on the variables that happened. And then the computer would work with your answers and spit out a report of what happened to you that week. And the next week you'd have to answer the questions again.
Yeah.
You want to do. So one of the things the professor had talked about was sort of the strategy chart. And it was like, when you have a business, which box do you want to be in? Are you high volume and high price? Are you high volume, low price? Are you high price, low volume? And, you know, just you work it out for the four quadrants, right? And you pick one. And I decided one day, like, hey, guess what? We're like never winning. Like, we were always selling. We were always moving forward, but we weren't winning the competition. So it was like, well, we have all this extra inventory, throw it into the market, into like the, you know, the bargain basement bin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we sold everything. So that week, everything, and I didn't know anything, right? I'm brand new, just out of school, like trying to get out of school. And I'm like, well, this makes total sense to me. I'm sure every CEO who ever talked to me after that said, you did that. But I think the point I'm trying to make is you pick a quadrant, right? This is what I got on my paper. When I wrote the paper about running the sneaker company, I got a lower grade, and I went to the teacher and said, why did I get the lower grade? And he said, you never switch your quadrant. You never switch. You have to have a really, really, really good reason for switching from one to the other, because your business model is designed around the quadrant that you're actually in. So when you first had to pick one, it was the first thing you had to do. You had to pick one of the quadrants, and we picked not the higher end. We didn't go after Michael Jordan as our, you know, as our brand ambassador. We weren't selling shoes at $1,000. We went and said, everybody else is competing for the brand ambassador. Let's be the cheaper guy that everybody can buy the shoes and make the market bigger. But then I tried to go, you know, a different direction because it got me a whole bunch of cash, but I ran out of inventory. Right. So it's like you had this whole analysis that went along with that switch that wasn't about the shoes at all. It was about the switch. So I would look at it and say, if your design was to be a high volume player, you have to be able to attract more people. You have to be planning on being bigger. You have to be able to run faster. As to your point, operations have to be speedier. You have to be able to get in and out of a job without getting stuck. Like you have to be the expert that can run constantly, you know, and be prepared for how do I deal with the fact that people can't get in the door on a Monday. They can't get in on a Tuesday. They have a 6-week waiting time, or, you know, you can get the price, but it's going to be a little while. If your roof's leaking, you probably can't wait for me because I am swamped for this long. People don't think about that part. Like, you pick that. That's the way you go. But if you're getting all your leads because your quality's better, because your systems are better, your people are better, that comes out. Okay? That may work, but that has to be your entire focus. Okay? You can't suddenly say, I'm going to do a high-end roof that's going to cost $50,000. And you're like, it's not in your model.
Well, I'll push back on that a little bit, at least. Now I'll jump into my retail experience. And I think that's also, if we kind of look at the model here, might be very similar. There's what's called loss leaders. So take your sneaker example. I'm assuming in your sneaker example in school, you had one style of sneaker that you could sell. You didn't have your good, better, best option. So they gave you, this is it. This is all you got.
I'm old. Yeah.
I wear the Chuckies too, right? Yeah. But, you know, for example, when I was working in retail, we had what we called loss leaders. And at the time, we were carrying a very good brand name set of tools. And one of the tools we had was a compound miter saw. I know for a fact, because of the position I was in, that we sold that saw less than we paid for it. So we actually did lose money on every single saw we sold, and we sold a lot of them. However, there's accessories. And the accessories that go with the saw would typically have a much, much higher margin. There's also wearables, you know, things that wear out. And what's the thing that's going to wear out a saw? Well, it's going to be the saw blade. People aren't going to take the time to get saw blade sharpened. They're just going to pull the thing off, put a new blade on, and away they go. Well, the margin on a saw blade was probably 100 to 150%. So even though we lost a couple bucks on the saw, you sell them the saw blade, you sell them the extensions, you sell them the table, all of a sudden you've made all that money back and then some. And I could almost see that happening here. And, you know, we, in the construction industry, there's all these add-ons that tend to happen. And I see this in pretty much a number of industries, but you tend to see a lot in construction. You know, if there's anything that's a change order, so they'll come in at one price, and then there's all these change orders that happen throughout, and that automatically puts it up. And I could see, for example, in the roofing situation, a change order. So the change order being, well, we can do the base shingles, or we can upgrade to something else, or we can put on new gutters while we're here, or we can, I don't know, do something else, or maybe as we get in there, like you pointed out, you know, the everything, the underlayment's all rotted out. That's going to have to be stripped off and replaced as well. Well, that wasn't included in the original bid, so now we have to spend more money there or charge you more. So there's some of what you're saying is true, but there's also, I think, this shift where we do kind of now blend. There's a certain price for one thing, but there's always the option to upsell them into another. And when we talk about that good, better, best, again, from the operation side, you usually want something that's really on the cheaper side. You want something that's more on the expensive side, and then you want something in the middle. And what you tend to find is if you have kind of that good, better, best model, they might not go for what's the high end, but typically they'll look at the benefits of going to the middle level, because it usually has the most features, benefits for the best price, and it has a higher margin than, say, the lower level, but you know, you don't want to spend the big bucks on the top quality. So I could also see some of that happening here, which is, you know, how do we get into that middle market where we're going to show them three options? More than likely, they're going to pick the middle one, which is our best for sales and our best for profit margin.
That's definitely fair. I was not thinking of that one, you know, other than the fact that, you know, I'm still looking at it from the standpoint of, if it was just one service, you know, I think I think advice number one is don't do just one service.
That's probably the best one right there.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going down to, I'm a roofing company, I've been a roofer since 30 years ago, and that's it, then you're kind of stuck. There's not a lot of add-on if that's all you do. You know, that's a good point. The guys that did mine actually were doing, we wound up doing the whole house. Like, we did roof, then we moved to windows, then we moved to siding, and then we moved to gutters. Then there was landscaping.
So basically the house was brand new by the time you were done with it.
Oh yeah. When it ended, like, you were looking at it like, what did I just do? But I mean, we knew what we were doing. It wasn't that they sold us on it, but at the end of the day, I'm sure they made more money on one area than they did on another area. Right.
Right.
So yes, I can see that point. You know, I can hopefully see that the companies that are offering a roof for $8,000, you know, have an uptick, you know, an upsell, something else they can get them to think about or move into, and then you make more money on the next job. So then you kind of do make it up on volume.
Yeah, I think that's the key here is, you know, because I'm hoping that people that listen to this or that follow along understand that if all you're going to do is try to be the lowest cost denominator, it's not a winning strategy long term. It might help you in the short term by helping get volume in the door, but as you pointed out, if you're not efficient or if you don't know your costs, it's a very quick way to put yourself underwater and really get in a big pickle where now you still have to pay people. You have to pay people fairly. And in most cases in construction, in order to get the people, you have to pay them well. There's variances in materials, quality, costs, all that stuff. So there's all these other factors to work in, but I would say more than likely, those are kind of more standardized, you know, costs that you got to factor in because it's really based on square footage. But in any industry, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's construction, retail, restaurant, if all you're going to do is be the cheapest, is probably not going to get you very far in the long run.
Agreed.
Anything you want to finish with, Rich, before we wrap up here? What would you tell people from the financial side? What's the best thing that they should do if they are either starting a business or trying to figure out their strategy on profitability? What would you have them do from either a product or service side? What's the first thing you'd have them do?
Oh, I have never been a volume guy. I've tried it a few times and I'm not a fan. It's not for me. So as much as I was mad that I didn't get the grade on that paper, I always took it to heart what the professor said to me back then. And so I always look at what's my quadrant and should I stay in that quadrant? So, I would tell people to look at exactly that. You know, what are you planning on doing with the business? Does it fit what everybody else is doing? You know, can you operate a high dollar in a environment that's entirely low dollar? And make sure you've considered that piece. And then at that point, if you need more bouncing it off of somebody, then you can email me and I'll be happy to, you know, help you kind of take a look at it and say how
And what's your email again if they want you to do a cost analysis for them or a price analysis?
It's rich@xcxo.net.
Excellent. And I guess from my perspective, I do agree with Rich. I would rather focus on quality and differentiation. And that's something we didn't talk a lot about here. But, you know, as you look at all these ads, like I said, they're all kind of the same. They all look the same. The only thing that's really different is the price point on them. Well, if that's all people are going to look at, that's all they're going to know you for. And unfortunately, it might put you in a situation where they're not going to call you. They'll call the cheapest guy out there. So for me, it's knowing your client, knowing the level of service you want to provide, and knowing the quality of that service. And if you have any questions on the operations side, you can get a hold of me at dan@xcxo. Rich, as always, wonderful conversation. I think this was a good one to talk about. And I'm sure we will have more discussions about this, and hopefully we get some feedback from some of the listeners on what they would prefer to do or not do when it comes to pricing strategy and profitability.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care. Have a good one.
All right. See ya.
Thanks for listening to Books and the Biz. If today's conversation sparked new ideas for your company, the team at XCXO can help you turn those ideas into action. XCXO brings together seasoned executives, fractional CEOs, COOs, CFOs, and CXOs, who step into your business with the experience, strategy, and leadership to drive real results. Whether you're trying to scale, strengthen operations, improve profitability, or prepare for transition, our experts help you move faster and lead with confidence. To learn more or start a conversation, visit xcxo.net. That's xcxo.net, your shortcut to stronger leadership and a better-run business. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time on Books and the Biz.